You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Wednesday night and it is Ryan, so you know what that means. The hardest of cuts on the intro music because I think it's funny. And with that, we are the Mark Order Podcast. If you're hearing my voice to start, that means a certain someone is in here. Kate was actually at the show tonight. Apparently some eagle-eyed listeners did spot her at the show. I didn't at all. But I saw a couple of tweets online saying, like, oh, I saw Kate. And I'm like, oh, well, I did not. So I guess my eyesight isn't that good. So it is me, Ryan, joined, as mostly always, by my co-host, Asian Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Good. I'm here more times than not, or at least more times than Kate is, I guess.
Yeah, that's...
It's a low bar, but I know.
Yeah, that's like saying, you know, you jump higher than I do. Like... We gotta set a bar here, but
I'm happy to be here with you, Ryan.
I'm happy to be here with you. Anything new in your crazy life?
Not really. Watched some football over the weekend, went to a football game, and that's about it.
Yeah, I did the same. I was worried that I was going to have a rough start to my fandom year, but luckily they pulled it out in the end, because not only do you want your team to win, but you want them to beat their division rival. So that would have been ugly for the Eagles to lose to Dallas opening, week.
That's true. That would have hurt.
And I was real worried because it had like, and we don't have to stay long on the Eagles, as I'm the only Eagles fan here, but they, their defense wasn't doing well, and just as it comes up with a big stop and they look good, the lightning delay, and I'm like, God damn it! But luckily, neither team played well after that. And yes, BG pointing out, not a good start for Jalen Carter. No, not a good start for Jalen Carter.
No, that's bad. But...
Did Nebraska win this week?
Yeah, they played Akron, so they won 68-0.
Say that score again.
68-0. 1 point shy of being nice.
I mean, at some point, what are those games even doing for them?
Practice.
I guess, but like...
It's been a long time since Nebraska was able to do that, like what they're supposed to do, so I'll take it for now.
That's true. I guess if you were all not the... If you weren't able to beat up on people, it's nice to at least do it once.
Mm-hmm. This week they play a smaller school, so that'll be even more entertaining.
Say that again?
They play Houston Christian.
Oh, Houston. Oh, I heard Houston, and I didn't hear the end. I'm like, so 70-0?
I hope we're not that bad. I don't know. All I know about Houston Christian is they play in a small campus in Houston, and their football field is next to a CVS.
Yeah, I mean that they're gonna. Oh. Real quick, Kate did tweet that Tony Storm spat on her, and she liked it. So at least we know that. Thank you, pieces. Scott George saying, "Good evening, gentlemen." --- Ryan, but I'm gonna call Scott George out. He pluralized gentlemen. There's only two of us on screen. So if he's excluding me, he used the wrong word.
Maybe I'm more man than one.
You are more than one man.
Mm-hmm. So, or maybe he was saying hello to other gentlemen in the chat.
Ah, damn it. You're probably right. Mm-hmm. I want to ignore that.
Yeah, see, gentlemen.
Yes. I don't like that.
So what else in the wrestling world?
I'm trying to think. Was there any major news this week?
MJF and Alicia Toot got married.
They did, and apparently it was attended by a decent amount of AEW folks. Not Britt Baker, if you listen to apparently a podcast in which she was not happy about it, but she called. I'm not going to get into that. That's personal drama that I don't like. But, okay, there's that, but that's not. I looked for stuff and I couldn't really find anything, so I don't know if I'm missing. Like,
I mean, Danielson being on commentary now.
That's true. I was going to address that more in the show, but you're right. That is a thing, which I, as we'll get to, I liked him a lot tonight. I think he's very good at adding stuff. And I'll get, you know, when we talk about any of the matches, but Alexander's match about like the style differences, or when you talk about Ricochet versus Shelton Benjamin, talking about Shelton's power versus like all the skills he has, but he has, like, I think he was very good at that. I mean, the biggest news came from WWE, which we don't really cover, which is I think they said they're going to Saudi for WrestleMania, which.
Sure. I think we all saw that coming.
Yeah. Regardless of whatever, that just sucks for all the creators and stuff who really like, who go to WrestleMania for like, who that's where they get to see a lot of their where they get to interview talent and they get to do stuff like that. And all the indies that usually wrestle around there. It also sucks though for, I'll be honest with you, it sucks for the international fans. It sucks for the American fans. Cause not a lot of people are going to travel there or even be allowed to. So like,
it's going to feel like all the other probably Saudi shows out there.
Yeah. Like when you have a show here, England, Australia, Germany, wherever, if it's Mania, people will travel from all over the world to hit that show. They're not going to go. Like, I could be wrong, but I don't expect they're going to go there.
I really thought they'd do the greatest WrestleMania there instead.
Oh, Mike. I thought they were going to do. I never thought. Scott, I do know you're kidding, but I have to play into it. They are going to have to. I thought they were going to stick with their own shows. Like, they were always going to make Saudi like its big special event. But I guess Saudi at some point said, like, no, we demand like. So I would have thought like Survivor Series maybe, like, but then you're doing it around Thanksgiving. Maybe you don't want them. I don't know. The whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. You know, I'm not my bigger complaint there. Like I said, I mean, there's a lot of complaints people have about it. Rightfully so. I'm not gonna get into all that. I'm looking at it for more just like, for all the people who may have been thinking, this is the year I go to WrestleMania. And it's like, no, it's not.
Oh, it's a good thing. Well, WWE.
It's 2027.
Yeah.
Because this year it's in Vegas again, right?
Correct.
I have half expected them to just make Vegas the permanent home. I could, because you hear the stories that Vegas is, tourism is down and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I could have seen Vegas throwing them some money to be like, we want 5 years or 6 years of this in a row.
Yeah.
What do I know? Is there any other news, Chad? If you have news that you think we missed, I can't. You know.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head.
I mean, that's stuff that I really want to get into. Like, Toni Storm gave an interview where she talked about her time in WWE and how she doesn't think they gave. She felt like she didn't get a lot of direction outside of like, here's what you're doing on TV. But I don't have a lot to say on that because that's to each performer their own. I think some performers would prefer that. And I think others like her, like, no, I what do you want from me?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to sit here and be like, yeah, let's. And again, that's not really what we talk about, but she's clearly thriving at AEW and they're clearly having someone work with her on her. She is, I guess if I'm to think about it, her AEW character is a character. So clearly she and who I think it's RJ are just working on it a lot. And clearly that wasn't the case in WWE. So maybe she just likes the hands-on approach. I get it.
Yeah.
The stapled-on experience.
And well, so I think Tony Khan was making the round doing media, doing some radio interviews and press and things like that. And I think he was asked a question about if there ever be a women's C2.
He said he thought they could, right?
Yeah, I think they could. Again, I want tag team women's belts first. But I think you could do a C2 with how deep the roster is now.
Oh, I absolutely think they could do a women's C2. Oh, yeah, that pieces has a good one. But I actually, no, there's no but. I think they would. I think they'd have a great C2. I just see no reason for them not to do it.
Yeah.
And make it a big deal. Pieces did point out the piece, one piece of news I forgot, which is that Wardlow is hurt again, which really sucks. Apparently torn pec.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So that, you know, it's one thing you come back. Oh, I'm back and I broke my toe. So I won't really make an appearance for a couple of weeks. But generally speaking, I'm back. Torn pec, you're out again for a long time, which also, if American Gladiators keeps going and that's a thing, he's going to miss out on that too, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how long it take. What did Cody take, a year to come back for? Almost, not quite, but almost a year for Storm Peck?
Probably about that, yeah.
That sucks. That guy can't catch a break. Well,
he was healthy for so long. I'm like, you know, leading up to his return. I mean, he was healthy during the filming of Gladiators. He was healthy for a while, just kind of like waiting for creative. And yeah, gosh.
And then he gets back and instantly. I mean, that's just shitty luck. His career's had a lot of shitty luck to it, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's doing well. He's supposed to have his big moment, and that's when
MJF
has his issues with AEW, and then so that screws that up, and then he gets hurt. Like, it just, ever since then it seems like he's never gotten back on track. And I actually thought the Don Callis family might be a way to do it, because they've been doing a pretty decent job of they're gonna have a split, or I think soon, if we want to get it. Like, I think you're gonna see either Takeshita, I think it's gonna be Takeshita or Okada break away, and maybe someone else. So he could have stepped into something there, and just a shame. Mm-hmm. All right, so no other news. We're gonna go right into the show, similar to what we did last week. I figure with only Joe and I, it's a nice change of pace. When Kate's here, we go a little longer, so we'll do the commercials then. But I do encourage everyone to go check out the Shining Wizards podcast and the Shining Wizards Network. There's a lot of great shows. If you've been listening to us for a while, we mostly play that commercial every week, so you've heard it plenty of times. There's a lot to check out, so please check them out. I always say the Shining Wizards have the best wrestling interviews you hear. So every Monday at 7, for 16 years or so, they've been doing it. Go support them. They're awesome. Go have fun. And with that, we kick off AEW Dynamite live from the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia. I think this is their last round of shows there. I think they're recording it all the night anyway, so I think Collision's going to be pre-recorded, but this is it for them. I did not get to make it out. My life just did not allow for it, which really sucks. I thought I'd get to at least one or two of them, but you know, life sucks. but I loved the 2300 as a venue for this. I mean, obviously it's not something you could do beyond your random stuff there, but it did give it a nice feel. Do you have any thoughts on the arena side of things?
No, I like it when it feels kind of back to their grassroots of the beginnings of AEW. I feel like they really thrive in the intimate settings. And you know, what better place to have an intimate setting than the 2300 Arena.
Real quick, back to us, and Big G saying Cody was out for about 6 months with a torn pec. That's still a long time, but that would at least allow Wardlow probably to do American Gladiators if they did a season two or something. So for his sake, I hope that's what it is. But yeah, I'm with you. I like the intimate. I kind of like a change up. But you know, it's cool that, you know, now they'll do bigger venues for the pay per view, smaller venues for their weekly, and I don't mind that. It gives it a nice feel. You know. Do I think they wish they could go to all big venues all the time? Yeah, I'm not, of course, but it is a nice feel. I mean, and this isn't a knock on them. This is actually explaining it. Like, you look at like WWE, who's able to run pretty much all big venues because their tickets are still selling pretty well. So that's a good on them. They do their best to make it, like Raw and SmackDown, feel different, and all the, now the mats are colored differently. And so like, So companies are always trying to make the venue feel different. So the easiest way to do that is just go to a venue that looks uniquely different. So I think that's what the 2300 adds to the picture. So we start out with a banger with Hangman Adam Page versus Josh Alexander, with Don Callis on commentary. This was a mix. Hangman Danielson called it out, but it was a good clash of styles in a way. Hangman, they put him up as like the brawler, the bruiser, the hitter, whereas obviously Alexander's the technician. He's the mat wrestler. He's that guy. And I think they tried to show that off in the match, where Alexander was doing the more traditional wrestling moves, and Hangman was always trying to get it to be more punches and hitting and a little rougher. There was a lot going on, and just, you know, for an opening match, they really did it. And I think Alexander looked excellent. I mean, he's an awesome wrestler, but in AEW hasn't had his chance to shine yet. I think he's on that holding pattern that they tend to put some wrestlers on, where he's in the Callis family, so he's getting on TV, he's having some matches, but they're not ready yet to push him. I think that's like, you look at like Switchblade before he got hurt. Switchblade was starting to get into the main event after he'd been in a holding pattern. Like, I think they do that with some guys. But Hangman wins by pinfall with a buckshot. Afterwards, well, we'll do the match first. What'd you think of the match?
Really, really had fun with the match. It wasn't a match. It was more of a brawl than a match. I loved the energy from the get-go. I liked how Danielson really added on commentary, the parallels of his career when he arrived at AEW and Josh Alexander when he arrived, and how they both were, you know, coming into AEW on a high, and then they ran to Hangman. And I thought that would be a nice little comparison nugget to throw in there. And I like, to your point, talking about how Hangman is a brawler and a striker, and Josh is more the technician. I thought it was nice to see how Hangman was really working over Alexander's neck, whether he's dropping him on the floor with a dead eye, or some other moves he had in the match when he focused on Josh's neck. I think that really did a nice way of storytelling for the match. And I'm glad that Hangman won, and I'm glad that he overcame the shenanigans of the Don Callis family and interference.
Yeah. So then after the match, we have Hangman on the mic, basically talking about like all he went through to win, and he didn't do that to have MJF change the stipulation, to have people always need someone like, I think he called him the phallus headed Don Callis or something like that. He didn't do all that. He didn't win it just to suffer through all that. And he's here because AEW is all about wrestling, and that's what he wants to do. And then the proto star, Kyle Fletcher, comes out and said, basically, like, I'm going to take this from Don Callis' family. It's the most dominant faction. I'm going to take this from you. Then he gets in the ring with Hangman, because Hangman basically invites him. Hangman kind of says, like, you remind me of myself when I was facing off against Chris Jericho, and people said I wasn't ready. And basically, you're not ready yet. He also makes a joke about not wearing socks, because Kyle Fletcher doesn't wear socks. But if Fletcher really wants to prove it, he'll wrestle Hangman with the Don Callis family in the back. Fletcher kind of says, like, I've been here and I'm not ready all the time, but I am. And then you're not ready. Chance breakout, makes a sock joke. And I says, okay, it'll be just me and you, come our match. It was a good promo. It was a good promo battle, pretty standard, I think, before a big match. Any special thoughts on this?
No, it felt a little long. I like the fact they're really building up Kyle here and giving him a title picture feud with Hangman. And especially knowing that Hangman has gone now through Mox, and now MJF, and now Kyle. I mean, that's a pretty good start to this title reign for Hangman. And in the meantime, helping add more credibility to Kyle Fletcher's record as a single star. So no complaints.
Yeah, I think it's Kyle Fletcher is a star. I mean, there's just, it's almost like he's the prototype for one. So like a prototype star.
A prototype star, huh?
A prototype star.
Yeah, I like that. Put that on a shirt.
You got to do it that long, though. Like, don't abbreviate prototype star.
No.
We get an MJF promo from after last week. Said, like, he left Alicia Atute in bed. He has to fight Mark Briscoe. And no matter what Briscoe brings, what stipulation Briscoe brings, he's gonna kick the crap out of him, essentially. I mean, you can say it whatever way you want, but that was essentially it. Any thoughts on MJF?
No, I'm just curious to see if this is gonna be the blow off match and finally, like, to end this feud. And I'm just curious to see kind of what the stipulation is.
Me too. I'm going for a tickle fight, but that's just me.
Ooh.
No one would see Mark Briscoe proposing that.
What if we had something where you had to, like, lock your opponent inside a chicken coop?
Oh, God, it's WWF from 1995.
Like a casket match, but with a chicken coop.
It's like, the pig pen matches or whatever? We had to, like, That's what it's reminding me of. We get commercial footage of Renee from earlier in the day interviewing the Young Bucks, basically saying, like, if they win their match tonight for the money, it's what, 250 is what they get. They won't be eating this food. They try to sit down at the table with the other wrestlers. The Dark Order says, no. Then they go to, they find Brandon Cutler. They start talking to me, and he says, something I should have told you this long time ago. Shut up, Young Bucks. Big cheer. But then they find out that if they win tonight, John Moxley's side won't take their money, so the Young Bucks will get $500,000 because they don't care about money or titles. It's clearly Mox is in recruitment mode in a certain way. Yeah, we'll see more of that, but he's playing games with the Young Bucks to get them on his side. Any thoughts on this just fun, I think, segment?
No, it's always, I mean, I haven't seen the Dark Order on AEW TV for a while. Moxley had become this interesting motivator of sorts, trying to recruit people, whether it's, you know, the Bucks or Statlander or another person who we see later. He's been really quite the motivator. So I'm interested to see where else it might pay off for him.
Yeah, he's doing. This is the most interesting I've found the Death Riders in a long time. Like, whatever's going on here. It's a shame they weren't doing this when he had the bell. So then we move on to our next match. Alex Winza and Rio versus Emi Sakura and Mercedes Moné. Haven't seen Emi for a long time, but she's brought back because she is Riho's mentor. A lot of back and forth in this match. You know, giving a chance for Riho to show off. I think Alex Winza is still trying to say, hey, I belong here. Mercedes is awesome. To me, this was a pretty obvious way this was going to win. And the whole time, you don't bring Emi into this match if she's not going to take the loss herself, which she lost by submission. I don't think it was a bad match. I don't think it was an overly outstanding match with an ending I expected. I don't know if you have any differing thoughts.
Yeah, it was fine for what it was. I thought the balance of the teams was really good. It was a good matchup where you had, you know, Mercedes and Emi as her kind of heavy with, you know, versus Riho and you know, Alex Windsor as her heavy. So I thought that really complemented one another pretty well. The one thing I had was that the outcome, while I could see Emi lose, taking the loss, I didn't love the fact that Riho won with a single leg crab submission because Riho is so small. Like, I think it wasn't as believable for me, even though commentary was really trying to build up that the single leg crab was like the first move that you learn over there and how important it is. I couldn't buy into that a person of Riho's size could get enough leverage to put it on Emmy and defeat her with it. I would have preferred her doing something a little bit more quick strike or, you know, high flying or something like that to beat Emmy.
Yeah, agreed. I like what they're doing. I mean, I don't want to complain that they did this. They need to make Riho look strong going into her match against Mercedes. Emmy is an established AEW talent, so she's not someone out of nowhere. She was around from the beginning. She has a history with Riho. Actually, Emmy was popular for a while when she was doing some of her stuff, and then she just stopped showing up. But, you know, Riho was, you know, I get it. For me, it didn't hit as much just because expected outcome type deal. Sometimes I don't mind the expected outcome, but like, I don't know, it just didn't have it for me. I want to say hi, Jesse Ozog, because Kate's not here. So then we go to the parking lot with Renee Paquette interviewing Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. And then it says he wants the Herd Syndicate to agree to a gentleman's agreement where it's just Ricochet versus Shelton Benjamin in the ring. Everyone else stays away. I'll cut quickly to the Hurt Syndicate had an interview later with Renee where MVP was about to say something, but Shelton Benjamin says, I got this. I don't think there's much to say on this. When we get to the match, it plays out in a fairly predictable way, but I'm not complaining because it was more wrestling predictable than, I don't know. But then we come back, we have a commercial for the By the Numbers breakdown of FTR versus Cope and Christian. I think the breakdown was fine, nothing to add. Then we have FTR come to the ring with Stokely. Was telling him, and Stokely saying, every week I hear that I don't get any hoes. But I look around, you guys all look like you're extras on the Roseanne show, so you're not getting any hoes either. And then FTR just challenges anyone in the audience to a fight, basically. So they walk around just yelling at random fans and having fans yell back. Get into it pretty heavily with one guy. And then the camera accidentally bumps into Dax. And then he goes down. And then they just start beating up the camera guy and someone else. Very, very weird. Am I the only one? Like, I didn't mind it. It's just weird, right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. It was a weird way of adding more heat to a team that doesn't need it in a feud where you're facing Cope and Christian. This whole segment kind of felt unnecessary. For me, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it was like parts of it were fun, but I got to see how it pays off because it just felt random, I guess is the word. Like, why all of a sudden are they challenging fans to a fight? Like, that's not really been FTR. I mean, they yell at fans sometimes when they walk out, but it's not really been their shtick to do this. It was weird. Pieces saying felt very odd, almost like something else was supposed to happen. If it wasn't for the fact that the camera guys and all were involved, I would have agreed. But I don't think you do the camera guy thing on the fly. Like that feels like a very planned, thought out spot. Like you don't do the camera guy thing willy nilly, for lack of a better word. I don't know if you disagree with my assessment there, but
no, I agree with that one.
Yeah. All right, then we move on. We have the match of Ricochet versus Shelton Benjamin. As I said earlier, Bryan Danielson, Jesus, I don't know why I still go with that, but Bryan Danielson doing a great thing of explaining that, you know, early on they were talking about the athleticism of both guys because both guys are two of the best athletes to have ever stepped into the ring. They can do. And they're both bald. It was bald on bald crime, which there was a wee ball people chance breaking out. The only thing is, but then Danielson points out that Benjamin's power plus technique, which I think was a really good thing to explain the difference in the wrestlers, because, you know, I don't think Shelton even now gets necessarily the credit he gets for being how good he is and has been for his entire career. But this was, as you expect, an awesome match. A lot of different moves that they seem to flow pretty naturally between a high flying move into like more technical into power. Like they read, that's something I like about Ricochet. Watching Ricochet is he's very good at switching up the style of the match. And so is Shelton. There was a avalanche Spanish fly, which was awesome. I thought that was going to end the match, but what we really expected to happen happened. Well, first, I should say, Ricochet brought out scissors. Shelton caught him. Then Shelton looks like he's going to stab him, holds him, and then he breaks the scissors, because Shelton's a stand-up individual. He may hurt people, but he hurts him with his hands, not scissors. I don't have scissors. I should be holding up scissors. But what we all expected to happen happened. The Gates of Agony showed up with Khan distracting the ref. Toa headbutts Shelton, and Ricochet gets the pin. After the match, MVP and Bobby come down. There's a brawl. Shelton takes out Ricochet. All right, give me your thoughts on this match. Would you have stabbed Ricochet?
Yeah, I think he deserves a stabbing. If maybe even a flesh wound, if not a full stabbing.
Yeah, that's fair.
I was pondering, do gold scissors hurt the gold standard?
Say it again?
I said, can gold scissors that Ricochet have
hurt the gold standard?
Yeah. Or do two golds cancel each other out?
You know, that's... I'm doing the math in my head. Like, you know, if you take out one here, does it cross out one? I think it depends on the purity of the gold scissors.
Oh, that's fair. That's good.
The more pure they are, the less damage it can do. Right. But if they're just gold coated, the metal underneath is going to hurt Shelton. Shelton is only immune to pure gold.
Okay. That's a fair assessment. The match itself, this is my favorite match of the night, actually. I thought they were a really good pairing, and they worked well together in the ring. I would love to see Shelton highlighted more as a singles guy, and I think this match just kind of like reinforces wanting to see more of him do singles matches and have a run with a title. Love the fact that the Hurt Syndicate would kind of had to play the dumb baby faces of, you know, getting got, as far as, you know, we all knew Gates of Agony were going to come out and interfere and cost, you know, Shelton the match, but we had to, you know, they had to be the good guys in this and stay back and play dumb.
Yeah. I'm not addressing Jesse's comment. I don't think we should. Accusing me of supporting only the gold standard of people, and where I am going to say, I am just saying, if he was the silver standard and they were silver scissors, it'd be the same math. It's the purity of the element. So if he's the iron standard, it's the iron scissors, and so on and so forth.
The more you talk, I don't think you're helping yourself.
No, probably not. I don't really care. So, Jesse got me. Oh, yeah. I'm not, like I said, it didn't bother me as much. I mean, I will say this. The Emmy thing didn't bother me, so I enjoyed the match. If we're on the fun scale, it's at least a 3 the match was. But this, and this was at least a 3 to 4 match on the fun scale. But the whole time, I'm like, all right, a Gates of Agony are coming out at some point. It's just such... I get that they're not going to do this idea because it would take a major thing away from the heels, but there really does need to be a stipulation where it's like, if I say no one coming out to the ring and you come out, you're suspended or fined or something. Like, there has to be a punishment to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the heels still do it, they take the punishment, but at least like there's.
Yeah. And this was also the second time in the night where we heard the whole, you know, keep your crew in the back. And we, you know, we had that during the Hey Man Fletcher promo about, you know, do it on your own.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. 100%. Which goes to speak that they really like their crews in AEW, which I don't mind. I've always been a fan of wrestling stables, but, you know, I'm going to mess with my notes. We then get a Hook promo. He's on a balcony somewhere. I'm assuming Philly, but I didn't really look at the background and it could literally have been anywhere. And kind of was like, yeah, I didn't like that they replaced me, but then Joe explained it and I'm like, I get it. I was in sports. It's cool having the ops have my back, but it's time for me to stand on my own, or maybe not. I don't know what the fudge this was.
I like a few things about this, though. I like the fact that he's leveled up. He's no longer doing promos sitting on the stoop anymore in New York. He's in a penthouse balcony. I like the fact that they closed the loop on the ops thing. So they didn't have that dangling out there anymore. He just kind of said, okay, cool, I understand now. No, we'll move on. I'd like them to close that up. And I think that it opens the possibility of him, you know, working with Darby or whoever else to take on the Death Riders. Because as the Death Riders add new members, more people need to be, you know, Avengers assembled for Darby to equal out the numbers.
Yeah, now there are, you know, you have some people on the bench that are coming back from injury that might be able to help Darby out in major ways. I have a couple comments. Jesse thinks maybe a steel cage match and one of the, you know, maybe Gates Agni. Someone's getting a steel cage, but who, what, when, where, why? And even the steel cage doesn't always keep people out. Somehow they get in. Like, it just... then Peace is saying, at least he's trying to talk, not just eat chips. How dare you not care about his hunger? And then finally, Big G with the comment that almost stopped me dead. He's not Stoop Kid anymore. Stoop Kid's afraid to leave a stoop. I'm not afraid to lose my stoop. That is... yeah, I... They're going to have to get the Avengers to take on the Legion of Doom. And I just angered comic book fans everywhere with that crossover. So very proud of that. We get a Don Callis promo basically with Fletcher saying like, Fletcher's awesome. I don't think there's much to highlight there. Hi, Kylie. Hope you're having a good night. Then we get on to Sky Blue versus Tony Storm in the Philly Street fight. Tony comes out in like a jumpsuit with Singapore King gifted to her by the Sandman. And Sky comes out, I think with her own, or she came out with something too. It was a lot of back and forth. The spots that are most likely to get highlighted, at least by a lot of people, are that she got Sky staple, put two staples, one in each of Tony's cheeks, and not the face. And then she stapled each. What word do I want to use? I don't mind saying boob, but I was trying to think of something funny and I'm not. So each boob got one, and then the lady parts got one.
Yep.
My hope, and I'm just saying it, because she was wearing a full jumpsuit, please God, let there have been like padding. Like that was, it would be unnecessary for her to take that when there's no way to prove that it happened, you know? In the same respect, in the end of the match, Sky Blue gets hit with the electric mosquito killer. And I'm just hoping it was off. Like, there's no reason to actually do it at that point. Like, you can mimic it. No one's going to know. What they can't hide is first Tony unveils a table full of mousetraps. And she has cheese, which she then gives to Excalibur, and he seems to enjoy it. Tony forced Skye's hand into one of the mousetraps, which, ow. But then Blue powerbombed Tony into the mousetrap table. So this was fairly vicious. A lot of chair shots, apron things, stuff on the barricades. Tony Storm eventually won by pinfall with the Storm Zero on a chair. After the match, it's pandemonium. Julia Hart and Tekla attach Tony. Chris Statlander comes out, but then she gets overwhelmed, so Jamie Hayter comes out. But then Tekla ends up getting the advantage of all of them, so she crawls out. She's the last one left standing. She crawls over Storm, and she holds up the title. Okay, Joe. Would you put your hand in a mousetrap?
The game? I like the board game.
Did you ever actually play the board game, or did you just set it up and then hit the button so it could go?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I wanted to see the guy jump into the pool, and yeah. No, I would not. I have no interest in putting my hand in a real mousetrap.
Yeah, I think you should. I think you should do it for the show.
What part of mine would you put in the mousetrap, Ryan? What appendage?
One of my toes, but I'll just do it right while I'm sitting here.
Gotcha.
And you'll totally believe me when I say I did it.
You say totally believe it?
I would totally do it.
Okay. I'm a little disappointed that Tony didn't cough up the money to try to get Enter Sandman as Tony Storm's music tonight.
I can't imagine how expensive that is.
Yeah, well, what's money?
Yeah, I'm just saying, Metallica with that stuff is...
Well, if you download it legally on Napster, call it good.
Now they have to wait 6 months to buy their private jet.
The match is fun. I thought it was a perfect match for, you know, for someone who, in real life, lit a person on fire. I thought this would be the perfect match for her. And that means Skye Blue. So I'm a little disappointed there wasn't fire involved in the match. I could use some of that.
Yeah, she doesn't use fire enough for someone who is a pyromaniac.
Yeah. Fun plunder match. Little fun spots. And then to your point, I liked how it was just kind of a vehicle to kind of promote and build up to the four-way match. And I thought Tekla, her spider pose over Tony was perfect. I love seeing that, and there's something different rather than just someone holding a belt over the fallen champion. It just looks cooler to me. So, big fan of that.
Yeah. Overall, like, I mean, this was a great, this was a really great Philly Street fight. Storm nailed the look, coming out with the makeup already smeared, that hair looking like wet. She just,
if I'm in a street fight, I would wear as much clothing as possible. Like padded clothing, at least. I wouldn't wear, like, what Skye Blue is wearing.
Coming out with bubble wrap all around you?
Something. I don't want to, like, you know, I want to do all I can to, like, avoid getting cut up and beat up too much.
Also, it literally just popped up on the top my... our Twitter timeline because Skye Blue reposted it, but AEW tweeted out Skye Blue is getting cheeky with the staple gun. Oh, you rascals.
Oh, she stapled that snapper good.
So we move on to, wow, we're really moving to our match of the night, which is Brodito and the Ops versus, oh wait, no, I'm sorry. Nope, we're going to have to stop that. I got caught up, because I like Scott. I got Scott's question that I want to talk about when we get to the main event. But there was a interview segment that was probably my favorite part of the whole night, which is Renee is interviewing Willow Nightingale, and Willow's like, I try to make wrestling a good place and people happy. So when someone doesn't want to do that, I think they should be punched in the face, which is just great. And she really wants to punch Marina Shafir in the face. But then as she's talking, Harley Cameron slides up and it's like, I know I'd find you here. I want you to be friends with Statlander again. I think we'd make a great team. I know I have to convince you, but you know, you're so wonderful. I'm going to have to do it by song. Name a chord. G, C major. It is excellent. So she sings a song about how she should join the team. And if she does, she'll paint a cat on her face. Meanwhile, Renee is cracking up. And Willow's just like, I wish I could. You're lovely. The cat sounds lovely, but I can't do this with Statlander again. And honestly, you should be careful because we know who her friends are. And as she finishes, Cameron starts to sing Cat on the Face again, and Renee joins in. It was just a perfect segment. What do you think?
I mean, I love how they use Harley and how she plays the perfect balance of comic relief, but also a viable partner. Always trying to find the good in people and try to bring people together. It's fun. I like seeing her use all of her skills and talents, and I can use more of it.
And Renee is just perfect for these.
Yes. Renee had gotten far more comfortable interacting in these interviews beyond just being an interview person. She's actually a part of the whole shtick now, so it's fun. They harmonize pretty well too.
Yeah, and it always works. I think when the interview person like becomes more part of it, it makes things better. You just look at the classics, like Mean Gene had a personality. Mm-hmm. You know, when he was in it, you saw it.
I like it more than just the, you know, like when they interview someone and then someone says something and they are just left staring.
Yeah. Well, Renee at least made her, what got Renee kind of popular first was she would stare, but she'd make faces. So at least but now she's even way more involved, which I like. All right. Now we get to the main event of Brodito, the Ops versus Death Riders and the Young Bucks. Young Bucks who came out to their real names. You know how I'm going to describe this. It is a clusterfuck in the best of ways, but it still is. I mean, there's just, move after move. One guy's in, one guy's out. It's for someone like me who doesn't track moves that well to begin with. I'm like, what the hell did I just watch? In a good way, but I just can't keep up with it. I mean, there did seem to be a point there where I really thought the good guys were going to win. Another nail in the Young Bucks money coffin, but the Death Riders and Young Bucks did win with a falling press slam from Matt and Nick Jackson. So they win the $500,000. Before we get to the after the match, I'm going to want your opinions on the match and whether you agree with Scott that they're going to make the Bucks pay back for what they abused in the past.
These matches are tough because there's so much going on. I guess a few highlights is I always love watching Brody fly and do a suicide dive because he's such a massive human being. I liked when the Bucks were trying to decide whether or not to get into the ring, and they finally did, and then ended up facing off with Brody and Will Hobbs and decided to backpedal. But the match itself, it was fun, I guess. I was glad to see Rick Knox catch the Bucks cheating one time. And usually Rick Knox is blind. So that was something different. And yeah, I think these money stakes matches are usually, I'm not usually a fan, but with the Bucks involved, it made more sense for me. And the fact they were able to win the money gives me a little bit more intrigue.
Yeah, I want to see Renee go up to them next week or whenever and be like, I just was informed by AEW accounting or legal that you had accrued so many fees for fines that
garnish your wages.
Yeah. Or you expensed a bunch of stuff that should not have been expensed. You owe us and not all of it, but like $425.
I could see Nick losing it all gambling. He talked about wanting to go to the casino and doubling it. So I can see them losing it like in gambling or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I just like the, like, I'm kind of with Scott on this one. I like the idea of the company coming in and be like, we held off on charging you for all these things. And now you're going to have to pay. Big G saying that he like that they had actual money out there for one of these matches. Agreed. Like, it's the first time I think they did it, which then had a fun shot after the show when they get attacked. When the Brody King chops them and the money goes everywhere. Yeah.
I thought when they were attacking the bus at the end, I thought maybe they're going to attack and the money was going to fly into the crowd.
Mm-hmm, me too. But the problem with that is you then are giving Alf $1,000. So I don't think they were going to do that. But even some of it, you know, would have been, even if they threw out $1,000 in the crowd and then the Bucks come being like, people owe us money. But the Death Riders take the ops out. The Brodito fights the Young Bucks in the back. The Death Riders take out the ops. In comes Darby Allin. He's fighting Mox. Looks like he's going to kick his ass. But then he's attacked from behind by Daniel Garcia. Mox looks pleased. Garcia curb stomps Darby into the chair twice. There is no savior in the form of Eddie Kingston that people might have been hoping for. What do you think about the aftermatch?
I like the fact they did the stomp twice because he missed the first one on the chair and then hit the chair. But I think I'm glad they finally pulled the trigger on Garcia joining the Death Riders, because I think it was kind of foreshadowed for a while. And, you know, we've seen how Moxley and them tried to recruit him back in the, you know, Blackpool Combat Club and everything else. And I think it makes sense for him to finally turn heel again. And, I don't know. I think we save Eddie's return to All Out.
That's not a bad idea. I think people were hoping for it for Kate. I was hoping the opposite. She doesn't deserve it.
No, I mean, the people at the 2300 arena, they have to clean that place up enough with all the fans there. They don't need to clean up a big old wet spot.
And then, you know, you're going to have Eddie return. There's still Orange Cassidy out there. So that's where I think you're going to get the Darby Avengers. So that was our night. What did you think of this?
You know, for closing the residency at Philadelphia, I thought they did a nice job. I think this was one of my favorite shows of the residency there. I'd probably give them if we're going out of four, I'd give them a solid 3.75.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm I had enough fun that I found this to be a 4 out of 4. There was enough really good that I'm going to leave with it. For on the 4 out of 4 on the, based on a Dynamite. Obviously, if this were a pay-per-view, it would be lower, but it's a Dynamite. It's a 4 out of 4. All right. So that's kind of our show. It's a quick one tonight. Joe and I go a little quicker when it's just us. Plus, I, you know, had a long day. I need to hit the hay. Joe, when you're not here, where can you be found?
Well, you can find me on social media at _AsianJoe. And then you can feel free to read my serial review blog, which is linked in my social media bio. That's about where I'm at. Ryan, what about you?
When I'm not here, you can find me on all our socials at here at Mark Order Pod. And then I have a history blog here for history.com. Has been updated a while. It will be, but I'm also trying to, I'll put it out there. So maybe I hold myself accountable. I am trying to do a history podcast to go along with it. I have it. I'm editing it. I hate editing. I'm very, very bad at editing. So it's taking longer than I'd like. But I'm going to try to do that soon and make that a thing to go along with the writing and everything. So there we go. At here for history at _herefor_history. So I want to thank everyone in the chat. Big G, Scott George, Pieces, Jesse, Taylor Cannon, 1LT, Trey Sammons, everyone who was in this week. Really appreciate it. Again, make it everything always better. And with that, we have a quick night. So I'm going to say goodbye if I can figure out how to do this. There you go. Outro.
This concludes the Mark.